Unto the Least of These, Commentary for the February 18, 2023 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn. Isaiah 61, verses 1 and 2. Two things sickened me in preparing this week's commentary on the Sabbath School lesson. The first is that in searching for images to illustrate extreme poverty, many of those images are claimed to be owned by major internet image management companies like Alarmy and DeviantArt. As if the poor have not been victimized enough, companies like these are not willing to allow free access to the images unless we pour some money into their bulging purses. This makes them more a part of the problem than a part of the solution. We all should be sickened by those whose only interest in the poor is how to make money from their plight. The second sickening realization is that our quarterly has for 6 weeks shoved the plight of the poor into the background while prioritizing increasing income to the church. While the prophet Malachi's words have been overused to encourage such giving in order to tell the donors there will be such a blessing they will receive, that there will not be room enough to receive it. The plight of the poor is set aside lest it interfere with the rivers of gold the denomination is trying to direct to their vaults. Only once that point has been made repeatedly in the first half of the quarter are we allowed to consider the needs of the least of these. It is ironic that a denomination that has one of the largest private school systems in the world struggles to make that education available to those most in need of education, to open the door out of poverty through the opportunities that education can provide. 30 to 40 years ago, it was a common practice for more established parishioners to pay the entire cost of tuition for the poor, enabling them to attend our schools. Whole families were lifted out of poverty in this way, and often went on to become pillars of faith in the church, blessing others as they were blessed. But somewhere along the line, a different attitude came into being. The wealthy and the denominational workers had opportunity to attend our schools, but the poor were often marginalized into the public school system. Too often this resulted in the loss to the denomination of these young minds and the support they might have been able to reciprocate back to the church for the support they had received. These children were also deprived of the intimate contacts made in our schools that can create a network of denominational support for their entire lives. While some may not feel this is such a loss, we ask what doctor may have been able to bring healing to someone if they did not have that education? What engineer was not here to complete a project that would relieve famine and drought in a desolate part of the globe, lifting entire communities to a better standard of living? There are so many fields of education that are deprived of what might have been when we do not make more of an effort to open our schools to the poor. Sadly, while serving as school board chair in the past, some have said to me that if we did that, they would pull their own children from school because they did not want their children to be associating with those kinds of children. Something has been missed along the way if we end up feeling like that toward the poor. Some try to excuse their attitude by creating a category called worthy poor, the intent being to show that they have nothing against helping those who are worthy of the help, although they never seem to clearly state what the guidelines are for worthiness. Worse, though, is the discovery that this is an artificial, unbiblical distinction, for the Bible never uses the phrase worthy poor. While the Bible does not speak directly to the abuse of modern drugs, that have become an epidemic in society. It also does not say things like, you are the town drunk, therefore you are not allowed to glean in the fields. Need is a standard measured by love, not worthiness. If worth were the standard, would any of us have hope of salvation? And if God can freely grant salvation to all who wish it, is it right for us to withhold food, clothing, shelter, or education from those having those needs if we are able to provide it? Another irony is that we not only have one of the largest private school systems, we have one of the largest medical care systems in the world. Despite that, many rural areas are underserved by doctors and nurses. Even in our cities, there are medical deserts where medical care is difficult to access. I have experienced this myself. Though I live in a county with the second largest city of my state, I have been unable to see a primary care doctor for over a year. A shortage of doctors is the reason given. While I am sure there may be several reasons why this is the case, I doubt it is because we are training future doctors to be more concerned about the plight of the poor than to be dreaming of nice estates, expensive vehicles, and discretionary global travel to exotic locales. I have great respect for doctors and nurses who can set their desire for those things aside and find a need and meet it. But even then, we might wonder how many of the locals in that far-off land could have been put through medical training if the same funds used to send Americans there had been used to lift the local people up in their ability to care for themselves medically. We no longer live in the days where third world countries consisted of people living in mud or grass huts, and there were no indigenous medical schools to train the people to care for one another. In the past decade or two, we have opened medical schools in the Philippines and in Central Africa that have added to medical matriculations in underserved parts of the world. In addition, many of our colleges and universities have been graduating thousands of nurses. It begs the question as to why we are not then making more of an impact in caring for the poor and needy, even here in the United States, where Adventism began. While I cannot speak for individual choices and situations, well-trained doctors and nurses can earn a great deal more money by specializing in certain fields as opposed to primary care. Even a nurse can find themselves earning as much as $2 million a year if they end up CEO of a healthcare organization. When faced with such temptation, it must seem like taking a vow of poverty to concern oneself with the needs of the poor. Little wonder, then, that the denomination does not place as much emphasis on self-supporting work as it does on tapping the streams of wealth that flow from specialized medical employment. Tithe alone from the $2 million income of one person would amount to $200,000 per year. A church of the poor and needy simply is not going to provide that kind of nourishment to the denominational coffers. Even a small church of tradesmen will be hard put to equal that tithe output. Some might quote the proverb that a rising tide raises all ships as a defense for the increasing wealth held by both the denomination and certain classes within the denominational membership. But I'm not seeing it. Despite ludicrous wealth in some circles, I see growing poverty in others. I grew up in poverty. When other kids had bicycles, I had shoe leather. When other kids replaced their worn-out shoes when needed, I had to make do until next school year. It was a time of one-income households, and my father worked 40-hour weeks at a low-level white-collar job for the federal government. But with four children in pre-birth control America, he struggled to keep the family fed, clothed, and housed. However, despite those challenges, I never saw poverty in the United States like I see today. Although we read of them in the history books about the Great Depression, we did not have huge homeless encampments when I was growing up like we do now. There are those who are blessed with wealth and who manage to paint a picture for themselves and anyone who will listen that everything is getting better and the future is rosy. But for those who, for various reasons, have been unable to climb to those levels of society, or those who have fallen from the wealth stratosphere like Lucifer falling from heaven, the world they experience is not like that. It is a mean scramble for survival, where even pennies, nickels, and dimes can be hard to come by. Judging by his Sermon on the Mount found in Matthew chapters 5 through 7, it is a world Jesus understood well, a world he ministered to personally. He healed the sick, expecting nothing in return. He fed thousands, again expecting nothing in return. He even made sure the naked were clothed. One, like Mahatma Gandhi, might rightfully expect that Jesus' followers would be doing the same, especially in light of the parable of the sheep and the goats in Matthew chapter 25, or the admonitions found in Isaiah chapter 58. But we are more likely to be found chasing the gold, desiring it no less than the denomination does. We've had good teachers through the decades who have, by example, taught us that gold is the ultimate panacea. Little wonder, then, that we are so rarely to be found among the poor and needy as Christ was. Instead, we seek out those who are financially equal to or better than ourselves, hoping to learn by their example rather than Christ's. And that is not a good thing. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find the written version of this podcast along with the footnotes and hundreds of other commentaries and podcasts at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.